Blog Talk Radio.
Each day do you wake up and get out of bed? You got all these feelings rushing round in your head. You got that bout with doubt and paper singing the blues. Pick up the paper and it's all bad news. But you know in the end, happiness is your best friend. You can be what you wanna be. Hard dare to step high and live like you're free. I said color, color your life happy. Color, every day you can choose. Color, color your life happy. If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
The difference between try and triumph is a little funky. We all have ups and downs, but you can still be happy. If you're gonna step, you might as well step high.
If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
ColorYourLifeHappy.com. Get your happy on.
Welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, May 11th. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. We've got a fantastic show for you today. Joining us in a moment for today's episode, Color Your Life Happy, Harness Your Passion, will be Dr. Kikanza Nuri Robbins, Organization Development Consultant and Textile Artist. Hi there, Kikanza.
Hey, how are you? I'm trying to get my
I'm good.
On.
I heard you laughing at my jingle. You like that, huh?
I like it, yeah. I'm going to get my happy on.
Okay. But first, while you're getting your happy on, I'm going to welcome all of my listeners. I am so honored that you carved out time in your schedule to join us. I encourage you to participate by asking questions or adding comments. If you're on the phone lines, all you need to do is press a 1 that lets me know that you have a question or a comment. If you're on the web chat, you just need to type in your questions or your comments down there where it says style, type here, and I'll be able to see your questions or comments, and then I can read them on the air for you. Let me remind you, too, that the show is live, so that means anything can happen. Lost signals is the most common thing that happens, so if your call is suddenly lost, just dial in again at 347-539-5700. And don't worry about missing anything because all the shows are recorded and available for you later under on-demand episodes on my show page. Now, for those of you who are joining us perhaps for the first time, let me tell you a little bit about me, Flora Brown. I'm an author, a coach, an inspirational speaker, and consultant. I'm also a mom of 4 and grandma of 3. I recently retired from 40 years of teaching through university levels. Yes, I started as a baby. The last 20 years I spent teaching critical thinking. If you haven't already done so, I invite you to visit my website, ColorYourLifeHappy.com. On my website, you'll be able to learn about my upcoming book, Color Your Life Happy, Uncover the Inner Joy You Deserve. My book is full of stories, tips, and activities that will speak to your inner desire to get the life you want and deserve. Now, this radio show is an extension of the book. Here we talk about different ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. In order to do that, each week I interview guests from various fields, such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change in adversity, parenting, wealth creation, career, and all of those things which contribute to lasting happiness. Well, let's get to the amazing show we have for today. Hi, Kikanza again. Welcome.
Hey, Flora. How are you?
I'm great. Before I begin our interview, I want to tell our listeners a bit about you. There's a lot to say about Kikanza, but I'm going to keep it brief as possible. For over 25 years, Dr. Robbins has served individuals and organizations whose bottom line includes the quality of their service and compassion for the communities that they serve. Kikanza facilitates groups as they wrestle with and reconcile their conflicts, coaches managers as they make the internal shift to become leaders, serves as a change agent for people and organizations that seek to transform themselves from the inside out. And she mentors institutions that are adjusting their systems and structures to improve their effectiveness. Kikanza narrows the gap between who you say you are and what you actually do. That can be a pretty big gap sometimes, huh, Kikanza?
Yeah, I narrow it. I don't always close it.
You don't close it, but narrowing is good.
Yeah.
Mission-based organizations and individuals throughout the country to clarify their vision, assess their progress, and plan for their future. I have to add, she helps individuals do this too, not only organizations. Kikanza creates a safe environment where people can take the risks necessary to learn. Sharing her insights and observations with clarity and candor, she encourages her clients to face the difficult situations that challenge their values. She leads them to this growing edge with unswerving focus and understanding heart and laughter that rises from the seat of her soul. And this is so true. Her unique combination of skills makes her both a compassionate listener and a compelling speaker. I am so honored today to have Dr. Kikanza Nuri Robbins as my guest. Hi there again, Kikanza.
Good morning.
I have some questions for you, but as we go, who knows where this is going to take us. So let's get started. Our topic is harness your passion. Off the top, I need to know, what is your passion? And how did you learn what it was?
Okay, well, how long have I known you since? I think 1974.
A long time.
A long time.
That's right.
I know that this conversation may go anywhere, so I want you
to
know I'm ready.
All right.
My passion is sewing. I have sewn all my life. My godmother, who was my first sewing mentor, said that I would drape my doll's clothes when I was little, and I got my first sewing machine when I was 13, and I've been making my own clothes since then.
Mm-hmm. And some beautiful outfits, too, let me tell you.
Thanks.
I'm surprised that that's your passion, that you
is
would
it?
Name that first your passion. Yeah. I mean, I know it is a passion. I know it is a passion.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't know it would be the passion. And so you learned that from working with your dolls and your godmother's observation?
I learned what?
That was your passion, the whole sewing and working with clothing?
I don't think I was conscious of it being a passion until I was an adult, because I wasn't conscious of what passion was outside of the soap operas. Until I was, but I have always sewn, and I have always needed to express myself in some creative way. I think that I know now that it was the first clue that it was my passion is that when I was 13, I negotiated with my parents to buy me a sewing machine. They didn't think they could afford to buy me a sewing machine. And so I said, well, you don't have to buy me any other gifts for the rest of the year. So it was a Christmas present. I said, the only thing I want is a sewing machine, so don't buy me anything else, and you don't have to buy me anything for my birthday or anything else for the rest of the year if you get me a sewing machine. And that was the deal. And I will use it.
Okay.
So from the perspective of however years later, I can see as looking at 13-year-old children and what they're usually interested in and willing to give up, that clearly had to have been a passion of mine in order to make that kind of radical negotiation and stick to it.
Yeah, the reason I said that I was surprised is that in many cases when people name their passion, it ends up being the career that they're in, whatever job they're doing. And so I was surprised that when you said that because I know you love sewing. I just didn't know that that would be the passion you would name. So what is your passion of sewing? And do you incorporate it into what you do? How do you honor that passion? And do you incorporate it into your career?
I honor my passion by sewing. I sew all the time. And I have a studio, and so I have a place to sew, and the machine is always up, and the ironing board is always up. I've got a professional cutting table. So I've got a real studio, and I sew. I sew almost every day. I make most of my clothes and wear them. And I and if you look in the little book I carry around with me, it's my my brain book. I put client notes and notes to myself and meeting notes and things like that. But in addition to that, the pages are always in the margins, or the whole pages are filled with ideas for designs that I want to make, either clothes or quilts or something like that. So I've always got ideas flowing in my head, or I'm seeing things that give me ideas and jotting them down. So
do you create your own patterns? I'm sorry, did you create your own patterns as well?
I do. I took a pattern making class, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 years ago. So I know how to do them from scratch, but it takes as long to make a pattern as it does to make a garment. And what I do now is I'll find a pattern that's close to what I want and use that as a base and then adapt it.
Okay, okay. Now, what about your work, your career? Are you passionate about your work as well?
Not so much. I used to be.
Okay.
I used to be, but yeah, I'm 60. And I've been doing
You're 60? Oh, my gosh.
I am.
I'm only teasing you. I know how old you are. Actually, I'm older than you are.
I know, so we won't tell everybody how old you are.
That's right. I'm ancient. But yeah, so tell us about your work.
About
you know,
work.
When you say you're not passionate about it.
As a matter of fact, over the past year, I keep testing and ask myself, so would you rather be working or would you rather be sewing? Would you rather be writing or would you rather be sewing? Would you rather be giving a speech or would you rather be sewing? And the answer is always, I'd rather be sewing. So I think part of it is the stage of life that I'm in right now. But let me say this about my work, that when I became clear that I was going to have to work, and I don't come from a socioeconomic background where not working was an option presented to me, but somehow it took a while for me to get that. But when I became clear that I was going to have to work, the first thought that occurred to me was that people who work spend the prime hours of their day and the prime days of their life working. And if I had to give up that kind of prime time, it better be something that I liked. So I made a commitment very early in life that whatever work I did, I better be having fun while I was doing it. So although I don't, at this phase of my life, have high passion for my work, I love my job. I absolutely love my job. I feel so grateful that I am able to do work about which I have had great passion, work that I love with people that I care about and people that I respect. So my my work is really, really important. That's pretty much all I do is work and sew. But I'm getting tired, and so I'd like to work a little bit less.
Okay. So you're making a differentiation between the passion that people say if you do this work and it's your passion, you can do it forever. So you're saying that you had high passion for the work that you do now at one time. You're not as the passion's not as high now, but you still enjoy it.
Absolutely, I enjoy it. And when I started this work, I thought that I'd be able to do it forever. And frankly, given my, the economy and the state of my retirement package, I probably will be doing it in some form or another forever. But what I didn't count on was that I don't have a 35-year-old stamina and energy and excitement that I had now. And so, you know, I'm older and I'm a bit more cynical and a bit more jaded. And, you know, it takes a lot more to get me excited. And it's like I love my clients, but there is not I don't get the same kind of excitement because it's not as new now as it was then.
Okay.
So what I am doing now in my job to keep the energy and to keep the interest is to find ways that will interest me and different kinds of clients, different ways to challenge myself so that I'm always keeping my edges sharp. It's like, you know, with a good knife, if you don't sharpen it or if you don't hone it every time you use it, then ultimately it's going to get nicks and dings, and it's going to get dull, and it won't work as well, regardless of how good it was when you first got it.
Yeah, exactly. That reminds me of Stephen Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I think it's habit number 7. He talks about sharpening the saw.
You have to take time to sharpen the saw. So one of the things that I have done throughout my life has been to take time off to take classes, take time off to retreat, just to stop working so that I can rest and recover and reflect and refocus and be able to do my work really, really well. I think that's so important. These days I call it Sabbath rest. I was talking with a client recently, and they were saying that somebody wanted to trade in their vacation time and cash it in and keep working but get the cash for their vacation. And I said, absolutely not. People need vacations. And the reason for the vacation is so that they can get away from the work and get some rest and come back to it doing the work better, refocused and sharper. You got to have time to sharpen the saw.
Yeah. I remember you used to – go ahead, because maybe you're about to tell us about one of the things you used to do.
Probably not. But one of the ways I sharpen my saw is sewing, because my best thinking is done when I sew. So if I'm writing and I'm stuck writing, I'll get up from the computer and I'll go into the studio and spend some time playing with the textiles, and that's where I get my insight. That's where God speaks to me when I'm sewing.
Oh, wow.
So I have to do it.
That's amazing. What I was thinking about was a long time ago, I remember when I was changing diapers and chauffeuring kids, you would frequently, I guess once a year, go to a retreat at some special place. And I think, wasn't it a monastery or something like that?
Yeah, I usually go to monasteries. It was up in Santa Barbara, and it was run by a community that had originally been nuns. So it had been a convent at one time, but now it was an ecumenical and I want to say multi-gender, but it was co-ed. It was a co-ed community that was open for individual and for group retreats. The most extraordinary retreat I ever did was 30 Days in Silence.
Wow.
That was the most profound spiritual experience that I ever had. It was amazing. I was there for 6 weeks, and the first 3 or 4 days they're getting us ready and building community, because there were 50 people there from 11 different countries, and they built community in such a beautiful and subtle way. And then the first few days of the silence, I'm thinking, oh, this is a bunch of psychological stuff. They're not going to get me. I'm not going for this. I'm there. You drink this Kool-Aid.
Where was this located, Kikanza? Where was it?
In Los Altos? Mountain View, up in Northern California, near Stanford.
Okay.
I
know Mountain View. Okay.
Yeah, and so it was just absolutely extraordinary, and forced me in the silence to go deeper than I had ever gone inside myself in terms of exploring, because when you go to therapy, you can be challenged by your therapist, but then you go home and talk to a friend and say, you know what that idiot said to me? That's not true, is it? And then if you pick the right friend, they're going to say, of course not. That's not right. You probably have the wrong therapist. And then you don't go back another week. And so you get reinforced in your own misperceptions. But
yeah, you just undo everything. Huh?
Yeah, but you couldn't do that for long. Now, at this place. So, yes, I do retreat. And the kind of retreats I take now are sewing retreats. And so I'll go away with a few other women and who are equally passionate about sewing. And we create for a week and laugh and support one another. But at the same time, it is totally disconnected from all the other parts of my life. And this is a time for rest and reflection and renewal, so I come back better.
I want to talk a bit about, I don't want to belabor the 30 Days in Silence retreat, but what makes that so powerful? Because I'm relating to the few times that I've taken maybe 2 or 3 days to just stay in while my kids were away, not go anywhere or talk to anyone. And how that, what does the 30 days in silence do for you? What happens with that?
It is enough time for you to do a brain dump.
Mm-hmm.
It's enough time for you to go through all of your rationalizations and ways that you fool yourself about how you deal with the world. And enough time for you to face some of the truths in your life, and time for you to figure out what you're going to do next. So it's the time. It's not just the silence, but it's the time.
Do they give you prompts and things to do or think about or write about during that time? How structured is it?
Yes, it is moderately structured. I worked with a spiritual director, and so I would meet with him once a day for maybe 15 or 20 minutes, and I would talk, and the first 10 days I argued, and so he would raise questions, give me things to think about, make suggestions for me to read, suggest that perhaps that I was fooling myself. And then send me back to my room.
Send you to your room.
Yep.
And no television and no telephone.
So we were in an environment where it was beautiful gardens, and you could walk down to the beach, and people would swim, and everything was done in silence. And the other part of the silence that was so great for me as an introvert is that all the time spent in surface level social communication was eliminated. So, for example, if you're sitting in a waiting room with 2 or 3 other people, we have a social obligation to say hello, how are you? Oh, you here to see Dr. So and so? Or I read that magazine last week, or whatever. But on a silent retreat, you don't have to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. You cannot say anything. You don't talk. And so if you're thinking about something, no one is there to pull you away from it. Mm-hmm. And if you're not thinking about something, no one is there to distract you, so you end up thinking about something important.
Wow. That's amazing. Does honoring your passion to you mean that you'll be happy? Do those two go hand in hand, honoring your passion and being happy?
I think that absolutely. If you find ways to honor your passion, your soul will be sated. And if you have a soul that's full, then you will find contentment. It doesn't mean that you're going to have a perfect life. It means that you will be able to find joy in the life that you have.
So, for example, in your case, sewing is your passion. If for some reason you neglected to sew for whatever reason, decided you were working too hard on your job, you couldn't afford to buy fabric and da-da-da-da-da, and you put it off and neglected it, it sounds like you would be missing a big part of your life, because you even said that when you're sewing, it's when God speaks to you.
Yeah, I get off balance. I get off balance. There are times, there have been times when I couldn't sew. This was before I had a sewing room, so the setting up and the taking down took time. And I would find some other way to be creative. I would cook or do something else that's creative. But I need to have a creative outlet. Otherwise, I can't be who I am.
It sounds like you have to also make a commitment to make a space or place where you can go and do that to ensure that your passion, you get to do your passion, whatever it is.
You really have to like yourself enough to give yourself what you need.
Yes, okay.
So if
that's very important.
I think it's extraordinarily important. And so people often say, my clients, my individual clients particularly, will say, well, isn't that selfish for me to do exactly what I want to do? I said, but this is the thing that's going to make you be your best self. So isn't it selfish for you not to prepare your best self, but to present a less than best self to your spouse or your children or your friends? When you're not in the garden, when you don't exercise, when you don't do the thing that really brings you joy, don't you get cranky? I don't want to be around you then. Why would anybody else?
Exactly, exactly.
It's not selfish, it's self-care.
Exactly.
Most people don't find this kind of joy in their work. There are a few people who do, and they are extraordinarily lucky, and they know that. Most people can't.
Wow.
And so if you can indeed honor your passion through your work, I think that's fabulous. But if you can't, then you need to figure out what is it that you can do for hours and hours and hours without getting tired. What is it that even when you think about doing it makes you smile? What is it that you can do or not do that causes your soul to expand and your heart to soften? That's your passion. And how then do you make space to do it? I would, years ago, schedule days to sew. And so I would make a date to sew just like I would make a date for something else. And I would honor it that way. And that's how I would carve time out. The busiest part of my career, I would carve time out to sew. But I'm remembering now, even when I was a kid living at home, I would talk to my mother and find out what chores she wanted me to do for the weekend, and I'd get them done on Friday night. And this was part of my negotiation with her. So Saturday, I could sew all day long. And so I had finished my family obligations, so I could sew. And in those days, I'd be able to make a garment in a day because they were simple and my standards were lower. And so I would make something Saturday, and if I was lucky, then I could wear it Saturday night or the next day to go to church.
That's
or
right.
Monday when I went to school, yeah.
I made a lot of those low-standard outfits that you could make in a day when I was
Saturday
a
night special. I have to give my mother credit, though, because she said, if you make it, you wear it. And I can't do it, but I know what it's supposed to look like. So she set some pretty high standards for me. And she said, all right, this is the money you got for clothes. So you can buy fabric, you can buy clothes. Mm-hmm. But if you mess it up, then you get neither.
I want to take a moment to remind any listeners who are on the line who may want to ask a question to just press 1, and I'll be able to see your hand raised online, and I'll be able to put you on the air. You sounds like you really covered my next question to a great extent, and that is many people suspect they have a life purpose but haven't been able to find it. And you talked about some of the things you can do. Are there any other simple steps we can take to find our life purpose?
Their life purpose. Well,
your life purpose, your passion. Now, you differentiate between life purpose and passion. Okay.
Absolutely. I see that.
Well, tell me the distinction.
All right, let me think for a minute. Your passion is what you do that renews you. It's what you do that makes you most happy. It's what you do that brings joy to your soul. That what you do that allows you to sharpen your, to fill back up. And your life purpose is your life's mission. Why are you here on this planet? And what are you supposed to be doing while you're on this planet? And so for me, my life purpose is to make a contribution. My life purpose is to engage with people in such a way that they can get closer to being their best selves, to work with people and organizations so that the people can work through their conflicts and their distractions, so that as a community, as a team, they can produce whatever it is they have come together to produce or provide in terms of service. So that's my purpose.
All right. It sounds like the mission or your life purpose is outward directed, whereas your passion is inward directed. Is that the right? Is that right?
For me, that is.
Because your passion is directed at what renews you, and that enables you to carry out your life purpose, which is directed outward to help the world, the universe, the community, whatever way you want to define it, but it's to help others, not just yourself. So I can see the distinction that you're making here. And I have a caller on the line who has a question, so I'm going to pause for a moment to take that question. Hold on.
Okay.
Just a minute. Hello, caller. Please identify yourself, who you are, and where you're calling from.
Hello, this is Janetta, and I am
calling. Hey, Janetta.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
I have some women who I believe are listening from Chapman University, and they are young in their careers, so I would ask Kikanza to once again restate, if she would, how I believe that, you know, following your passion is a part of life's reward, and at the same time you have to be accountable to what work and obligation and all of that requires. So I would just ask her, if she would, one more time, for these young women who are early in their careers who may not be able to distinguish between how to spend their time with the passion they have and the work that is ahead of them.
Well,
my question makes sense. Oh, you can hear me. Oh, okay.
Yes, she can hear you.
Hi, Janetta.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. And I thought I heard a little baby.
Yes,
that's one of the young women she's talking about. That's one of the young women she's talking about.
She's following all of her passions right now.
I think that what's most important to understand, one of the most important life lessons is about harmony. And that is harmony rather than balance. See, if you think about balance and you, to balance things on a scale, whatever you put on one side, you've got to put comparable amounts on the other side in order for it to be balanced. And so a life that's balanced has a lot of stuff in it, but it may have too much of something. A life that's in harmony is a life, it is more like a recipe. So if you think about a recipe for a cake, you're going to have a cup of sugar and a cup of flour, and then you decide what kind of cake you're going to have. And if it's a chocolate cake, it may be a quarter of a cup of cocoa.
Right.
If it's a vanilla cake, you're going to have a teaspoon of vanilla. If it's a spice cake, you may have a tablespoon total of spices, which is way out of balance with the amount of flour and sugar and shortening that you have, but it's all that you need to create a delicious and harmonious cake.
Right.
So then, as you're thinking about your life, first of all, your life comes, there are seasons of your life. What you're doing in each decade has a purpose. So in your 20s, you're trying to figure out who you are, and in distinction from what your family has told you that you are.
Right.
And you're getting ready. You're acquiring skills. And in your 30s, your purpose is to find some meaningful work, and to do it. And also, it's a time for creating family and honoring that reproductive clock. And in your 40s, you're polishing and refining and maybe redirecting. So you've got to be clear about the phase of life that you're in and what that season calls you to do. And so what creates harmony in one season is not going to be harmonious in another season. And so it's important to recognize that you can indeed do everything that you want to do in life, but you can't necessarily do it all at the same time.
Right.
And so you've got to figure out what is the purpose of my life in this season? What is my task? What is my life task in this season as I fulfill my life purpose? And so sometimes it's going to be family directed, sometimes it's going to be toward education, sometimes it's going to be building your skills. And so your passion gets honored in different ways throughout these different seasons of your life. So in my 30s, I had to schedule time to sew.
Do what you want, right.
Now that I'm 60, I have more resources. One of which is time. And so I don't have to schedule it. I still set aside time, but I can sew more now than I did when I was younger.
And I would say that's what I was saying earlier, that is a part of life's reward for the work that you did before. Now you're at this place where you can truly indulge your passion in a different kind of way.
Absolutely. But if you're smart, you're going to get work that pleases
you
and gives you pleasure, so that you're not going to work and hating all those hours that you're spending at work. So work is a reward also, because it gives you affirmation for your competence. It gives you opportunities to grow and learn or travel or do or whatever. So I'm a strong proponent of finding work that you love.
Yes.
And I'm really glad that you differentiated, though, between work that you love and your passion. They may not be the exact same thing.
And your purpose.
And, yes, because your purpose should be tied in with your work, that's for sure.
Yes.
And then your passion can be that thing that renews you, that takes you to step back and get ready to refresh yourself, renew yourself, rejuvenate, to go back to doing your mission and your life purpose or your work.
Right.
Absolutely. Because, see, I could get a job working in a fabric shop. I could get a job. I could have hired out and been a dressmaker for others, and I would have hated it, because I don't think it's fun to sew for other people.
Right.
And you know what? I think
you want me to make. I want to make what I want to make.
But you know what? You touched on a very important flaw of the educational system and of even with parents, and that is looking at what kids enjoy doing and thinking that that would be an ideal career for them. Now, in some cases, that might be true. For example, Gregory Hines, his father said that when he was a child, they would try to interest him in, you know, basketball and all the things that they thought boys would do. But they noticed that whenever he danced, his face lit up and he was just happy. Well, he was very fortunate enough to have a father and have parents who said, okay, he wants to dance. We're not going to force him to do basketball and these other things. And in his case, dancing became his, I believe, passion and his life purpose was to bring joy to other people with his dancing. So
right,
he was fortunate. Go ahead. I'm sorry?
He danced, and he was fortunate and able to be able to make a living doing that, but he also acted and he also sang.
Right.
And I think that's tied to recognizing your gifts and your talents and your skills. A lot of folks have talent, and they think that that's all they need is talent, and they don't build their skills. A lot of people are gifted in doing things, and sometimes the gift is, like, I am gifted as in sewing. I'm gifted with color, the use of color and space, but it's not necessarily something that I want to make a living at. And so I honed some other talents and acquired many other skills so that I could use those things to make a living.
There seems to be oftentimes with young people, and of course not the people that may be listening in, of having a passion that they're really not that good at. And I think as a result of that, we see in the media all of these talent shows like American Idol, where people line up for days thinking, I can sing. I know I can. I've been doing it. And
my entire life.
Right.
And all my friends told me I could sing.
Everybody.
Just because you love it doesn't mean that you ought to be doing it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yes.
In public. That's the key.
Right. Yeah. And hopefully having somebody that would care enough about you to tell you and help you redirect your passion.
Right.
Yeah.
Tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Well, I thank
tell you
to
sing in the shower.
But that the little one you heard crying is about to start again, so I'm going to continue to listen, but I'm not going to be on.
Okay, I'll just mute you, and you can still listen.
Thank you so much.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thank
you for calling in.
Yes.
I have a question that we've already asked and talked about a little bit, but I just want to emphasize that must we find a career where we can express our passion? And it sounds like we've decided no.
Yes.
You don't have to have a career where you've found your passion, correct?
Absolutely correct. But you need to find a career where you're doing something that you like to do.
Yeah, okay. But it doesn't have. So in other words, as you pointed out, you didn't have to go into a career of sewing, fashion design,
right,
or any of those things in order to express your passion. You're expressing it in a way that makes sense for you.
Exactly.
So that's important. And I think that somehow or another counselors get off base with that because they continually seem to give the advice of following not only the career that may be something you enjoy doing but isn't the right career. But too many times we're advising students to go after money-making careers. You know, this is a good career because computers are popular right now, so you should really go into this field. And I think that's a huge mistake to look at that.
Absolutely, I agree, because what happens is that you get a lot of unhappy, disgruntled 30-year-olds who have huge student debt and have a set of skills that they don't want to use. several I have several clients who had gone to school and they were doctors or attorneys or something that was going to allegedly bring them big money, and they hated their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And they were miserable. Miserable.
Yeah.
And but felt that they were stuck because they had all these student loans, and because their parents expected it of them, and because society expected it of them. Well, gosh, I have this education. Don't I have to use it? Well, you can use it. You'll find other ways of using it. But, you know, please don't bring your unhappy, jaded, cynical self to work and offer a service that I have to take and pay for.
Exactly. And, you know, interestingly enough, the lawyer, not all of them, a few of the lawyers that I know personally have gone into other work. I mean, one friend became a lawyer, finished law school, passed the bar, worked as a lawyer for about a few months, and the next thing I know, she was calling me to ask how to go about applying for a community college job. And I was about to tell her, and then I said, wait a minute. Didn't you just start working at this prestigious law firm that you've always wanted to work in? And she said, yes, but I hate it. And she was smart enough to get out of it right away instead of staying there for 15 years, like you said, some people do. And it's just unfortunate that people go into these careers for the wrong reasons. And while they may be money-making careers, I don't think to take you to work every day. And it's certainly unfair to your clients and your constituents.
It really, really is. Now, let me say this. There are some people who have jobs that they don't love, but they're in a phase of life where this is where they are right now. And so my message to them is I'm grateful for you doing this work that may not be fulfilling but may keep the lights on, to keep the water running, may add to the infrastructure of our society. And I would just encourage you to find other ways to fulfill yourself. See, someone's passion may be something as simple as reading. And so reading novels or reading trashy novels. And that's just perfectly fine. And so you sit on the toilet for 10 extra minutes every morning to read one more chapter in your novel. But do something that's going to make you smile during the day.
Yeah. Matter of fact, you remind me, I wrote an article called Make a Getaway Plan. You don't like your job? Make a getaway plan. And and by that, I mean that I'm with you. We can't tell people to quit what you're doing and starve while you look for the ideal situation. We do have to eat. It's a very important part of honoring your passion. You have to
it
eat.
Is. Yeah, breathing and eating helps. Are important.
And having a house to sleep in is very wonderful. But at the same time, if you're in a job that not only you don't like, but that you hate or that has a negative environment, then you do need to make plans to leave there, but you don't have to drop the job and walk away abruptly. You can phase yourself into leaving. And by the way, as you begin to do this, what happens is the job is no longer as horrible as it used to be, because now you have a purpose and now you know that there is an end in sight and you're working toward that end wherever it may be. And it's easier to tolerate as you're making your getaway plan.
Absolutely.
And eventually
and, you
you'll be able to phase out.
I've had a number of clients that I've worked with, and I was called in because the manager wasn't doing their job, or the manager, one of the senior managers was in conflict with the CEO. And I've come to the conclusion that this is not a good fit. And you know, I can't fix this because this person is miserable and they can't be their best self in this environment. And so what we've done is say, you know what, the best thing to do is to leave. And when people are given permission to leave, when they see leaving not as failure but as success, in recognizing that this is not the best place for me to be, then the the job helps. The job will help because as an employer, I don't want you. You don't want to be here. I don't want you here either. So let me help find a place to be more successful so I can bring someone in who's going to do this work well. And so leaving well is really important, and it's amazing. You don't have to create a conflict and get angry at folks and quit, but you have the conversation with your boss saying, you know what, I'm not sure if I'm the best person here, and so I'm going to find, can we together talk about better ways of using my skills and talents in the organization or other places that would be a better fit for my personality and my talents and my skill set.
Yeah, and one of the benefits of having a great boss, I would think, would be that a great boss would be able to assess when the talents and the strengths and the skills of an employee are not a good match, even though they may have seen that way on paper. But once they see this person at work, to be able to help this person find, because sometimes it can be a matter of finding a better position or a better way of working in the same company. It doesn't necessarily mean you need to leave. And some of the things that would please us are not that hard to accomplish in order to make our jobs more bearable. But like you say, there are times when it's just not a good fit and you do need to leave, but there's no point in burning bridges. If you are able to talk to your boss and work out something that's a win-win situation for both.
Absolutely. I have business partners, and we sometimes work together, and we often work for different clients and consult with one another. So we've got one client that we're sharing, and Randy was invited in because some of his former students were employees in this place, and they loved him, but it wasn't a good fit for him. So he did good work, but it just wasn't a great fit. So then I went in, and I didn't know anyone, but the culture was a better fit for me. And so he and I decided that I needed to do this job, and he needed to do something else. And so he left in a way that left the doors open for all of us, but made everybody happier because we understood about fit.
And also timing. You just—I don't know if you remember this. This was eons ago. You and I and another colleague were invited to work on, I think, writing a program, writing a book, or some kind of project. I can't remember exactly what it was, but the timing was wrong for us. Each of us was in a major life-changing phase of our lives at the time we were asked to do this. And you remember that?
I do.
I don't remember what the project was, but it was something.
It was
writing.
We'll remember in a couple of hours.
Oh, okay. But anyway, the point I'm making is
sometimes
the timing isn't right. Because as you mentioned with the phases of your life, back when I can remember when I was, I guess I was 30-ish, and I was teaching. When I finished my doctorate, I went to teach at the university, Cal State Northridge. At that time, I thought I would never work in a community college because in my mind, a community college was a glorified high school. And I thought, no, I would never do that. Well, as it turns out, years later in my 40s, when I was ready to move to a new position and I interviewed for various jobs, it turns out that the community college job I was offered was perfect for me because I discovered that.
And it allowed you to honor some of your other passions.
That's right. That's right. And the thing I discovered was that having worked at all various levels now by that point, that I love to teach. I love to, you talk about getting, I get tingles in the back of my neck when I students and they get it, or when I see this light shining in their eyes and it's like, oh, they understood it, they really get it, and that just is exciting to me. Well, I discovered that the community college level was where teaching is really respected and honored. You go to the higher levels, you've got to publish or perish, do a lot of committee work, and there's nothing wrong with all of that. But I love to write, but I want to teach too. That was my main thing. And so later in my life, I discovered that community college is the perfect place for me. So I'm saying all that to say that timing is very important.
Absolutely.
And so we have to realize that. Are there any major changes that we need to make in our lives, you think, to find our passion? If somebody is listening to this and they're saying, well, it's great for you too, to have found your passion, but I haven't found mine, what do they need to do, major changes of any kind?
No, you don't have to make major changes. You make smaller changes. First of all, you slow down.
Okay.
And start paying attention. What draws your attention? What makes you smile? What makes your soul sing? And follow that line, and it'll take you to your passion.
Mm-hmm.
You may be doing your passions and just not realize that you're passionate about it. Mm-hmm. But think about the things that if you couldn't do this, if I couldn't read, if I couldn't be with my grandchildren, if I couldn't cook, if I couldn't entertain, if I couldn't sing, would your life be the same?
Mm-hmm. And you know what, you just made me realize that sometimes I think people miss seeing their passion or acknowledging it because it's not something big and huge. You know, it's not climbing Mount Everest. It's like perhaps, like you said, singing or working in your garden. Maybe that's your passion. And I think because it's not this huge monumental thing by the world standards, we miss it. We dismiss it as not being important, and yet that may be the very thing that makes us have joy in our soul.
Absolutely.
Wow. We're nearing the end of our show already. Oh, my goodness, I'm enjoying the show. I know it's an hour long, but that hour goes pretty fast. So I'm going to have to bring this to an end and urge all of our listeners who have been enlightened, encouraged, and empowered, which I'm sure many have, by today's episode, to share what you've learned with your family and your colleagues. And remember, the recording of this episode is here on my site at blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown, where you can return anytime you want to hear it. Not only hear it, you can also download it. You can put it on your iPod. You can create an MP3. There are all kinds of ways you can carry this message with you, actually, in your car and listen to it again. I want to thank my guest, Kikanza Nuri Robbins, and I want to thank my listeners for tuning in. Thank you, Kikanza, for coming on today. I really appreciate it. And I learned something new about you, too. I'm going to ask all my listeners to join me again next Monday, May 18th, at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, when my guest will be Reverend Chinetta Goodjoin, pastor of New Hope Presbyterian Church in Orange, California. Her topic will be Color Your Life Happy, Embracing the Power of Joy. For any of you who have not visited my website, go ahead and do that, coloryourlifehappy.com. I also have a blog, which you will find out about when you go to my site. I'm your host, Flora Brown of Color Your Life Happy, the radio show designed to help you uncover the joy you deserve. I'm coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm going to ask you to have a blessed week, and there's just one thing I want you to remember, and perhaps you know what it is. Here it is.
Are we done?